You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, welcome to today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You are with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman, and we are coming with the first training camp episode of this new season. It's a pretty exciting time around here for the Locked On Seahawks podcast. If this is your first episode, you know, you saw the Seahawks were in training camp yesterday, and you're like, well, you know, let me look around the podcasts and see, you know, any Seahawks ones that, you know, catch my eye, and you happen to click on this one. This is your first episode. Let's give a quick intro. I'm Grant Goldberg. I co-host the Locked On Seahawks podcast, and I do social media and graphic design work for Silver Screen and Roll, an SB Nation site that covers the Lakers. And we are with Spike Friedman, as always, a writer for The Stranger, and now smoothie aficionado. Spike, how was your smoothie this morning, and are you ready to talk some Seahawks football?
It is 95% inside of me. Guys, I got a Vitamix for Amazon Prime Day. I'm like the worst. I'm the worst consumer. But I was like, oh, what a deal. And now I'm just crushing a smoothie. It's got green tea in it, so I've got extra energy. Right. I'm all perked up, popping out. I'm honestly, this has been a really rough offseason for the Seahawks, both losing guys, all this stuff with like the anthem, all the off-the-field controversies, Earl's holdout. You know, it's just been really hard, and it took me like 3 minutes of watching Pete Carroll's press conference, basically once we got past the Earl Thomas part of it, to be like, oh, yeah, yeah, that's right, I like football. Like, this is good. Yeah, football's fun. I like football. And, you know, the other stuff is all still true, but it was like, oh, thank God, we're not just like staring into the vacuum of nothing happening. And instead there's news. There's all sorts of news. There's all sorts of stuff to talk about. Starting to get some insight into what this team is going to look like. I think we should start with the bad news, Grant. I don't know if you want to kick that off.
Yeah. I think first and most notably the thing that, you know, surfaced yesterday, the Seahawks waived Malik McDowell, which kind of just set off this whole thing about the Seahawks, a shockwave throughout the organization, a bunch of transactions to kind of make up for losing Malik before the year even started. And it's kind of a big what-if situation now. If Malik McDowell didn't get hurt in that ATV accident and he didn't have those weird, you know, run-ins with the police, it's all just a bad situation and really an unfortunate thing to happen, especially when you use that high of a draft capital on him. But yeah, it sucks. I think that there's been nothing good that's come of the Malik McDowell situation with the Seahawks.
Yeah, I mean, it's been bad from the beginning. It's sad. Like,
yes.
That's the real thing, is like, you can get in to personal responsibility or whatever, but this is a fluky thing.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't get on an ATV trying to end his career.
No.
He did not fail to make the effort to come back, to the best of our knowledge. So there's no reason to castigate him. And it isn't the biggest bust in Seahawks history. He's a second rounder. Second rounders flame out all the time. And it isn't, I think, indicative of anything at the core of the Seahawks process. You know, if you look at the damage done by two big moves last year, the Cam Chancellor extension and the Malik McDowell extension, it just shows how big a role luck plays in the construction of a football team in the salary cap era. The fact that they basically lost a ton of draft capital and a ton of cap space for a couple of years at a couple of critical positions on the defense, that's not bad work on John Schneider's part. That is unfortunate, and it sucked for the players.
And we've praised John Schneider for, you know, the work that he did last year to patch up the defense and to patch up the whole team and to kind of go all in and make a run, but the injuries just kept piling up and piling up. And, you know, you look at a team like the Rams that we talked about last year that had tremendous injury luck, and it transitioned into this offseason, and it allowed them to be, you know, as aggressive as any team was out on the market, whether it be signing free agents or trades. And, you know, they were able to add to their team, bolster their team, add to the depth that they already had. And you see a team like the Seahawks last season and this offseason, you know, they've been forced to kind of fill in the gaps on their roster. And that's going to be a huge difference between those two teams, at least in the division and in the whole conference of the NFC. And it doesn't help this training camp opening up with Deion Jordan being hurt and just having the same issues going forward when it comes to depth on the defensive line, because you know, that's an area where the Seahawks are going to need other guys that are not as big of names to step up and fill in these gaps.
I mean, this is the bill. Like, people are talking about, like, the Seahawks in terms of regression. I mean, USA Today had them at 4-12 this year, which is, you know, it's possible. Hey, look,
we were going to talk about that, but yeah, there's a lot to talk about. And I forgot to mention Frank Clark had hand surgery, which hurts the depth even more on the defensive line, at least early on.
Yeah, and, you know, Jaron Reed's had issues. Nas Jones has had injury issues. Like, there's no guarantees on the defensive line. I guess, like, the thing is that this team has had a really good run.
Yeah.
This team still has some really good pieces in place. And so you're going to have these issues. Like, you, as much as Pete Carroll talks about winning forever, no one wins forever in the NFL unless they literally have Bill Belichick and Tom Brady on a below-market contract. That is the only way you can win forever in the league. Even the Pittsburgh Steelers miss the playoffs from time to time. The Packers miss the playoffs from time to time. The Ravens have been bad. You know, they've been bad recently. Those are the other model franchises, along with, frankly, the Seahawks, in that tier that is just not quite the Patriots. And those teams miss the playoffs from time to time. You know, something that I was reading, it was Mike Sando's QB tiers column. And Russell Wilson is comfortably in the second tier. I think he was, like, sixth ranked overall. Yeah,
behind, like, the Roethlisbergers, Breeze, Brady, yeah. Aaron Rodgers. Matt Ryan, yeah.
Which, you know, whatever, it's fine. You can argue him anywhere from 4 to 7, I think, at this point. I guess maybe long-term you could argue him as high as 2. But
generally,
I think,
you're in a good position if he's you know, in that tier.
But there already was, like, a little bit of, like, quotes from anonymous scouts being like, he had a real look-at-me off-season in reference to, like, the award shows that he hosts and, like, the travel he did with Ciara and, like, the charity work he's been doing. And it's like, man, it took Russell Wilson missing the playoffs one time in a winning season where he was responsible for every Seahawks offensive touchdown except for one for anonymous scouts to start race-baiting him on ESPN. It's insane. Like, Russell Wilson is a very good quarterback, and it took, like, him having, in some ways, his best season and certainly his most important season in terms of his role on the team, and he still had guys coming at him for the same charity work and, like, award show hosting he's been doing his entire career with coded language. I was like, this is wild. And I don't think the Seahawks are necessarily at all favored to make the playoffs in a really good NFC this year.
Right.
And, like, we're just going to keep hearing nonsense and, to a degree, like, tune it out. Like, that's my big thing is, like, I'm highlighting this for, you know, so I'm not following my own advice. But, like, there's going to be a lot of, like, real nonsense talk this year. Tune it out. Russell Wilson is still good. The Seahawks still had a good run. They've got cap space and draft picks next year. This is a rebuilding year. It might get ugly. It might not. But, like, tune out the nonsense.
Yeah, there are a few certainties in this world. You know, people say death, taxes. I'm going to throw in Russell Wilson at the Nickelodeon Kids' Choice Awards every offseason. You can also add in, like, Russell Wilson at USC and UCLA doing workouts. Like, there has been as many pictures of him working out as I've seen in any of his off seasons. It's like grasping at straws, right? Like, you see the Seahawks, you know, they're perennial playoff contenders. They miss one year. And like you said, you know, they just pounce on Russell Wilson. And he's always been an easy target, whether it been, you know, not working out, which is a new one. And then whether his teammates think he's black enough, and just other ridiculous things. And he's just been such an easy target in comparison to, like, Andrew Luck and RG3 in their rookie year. And you see him being compared to other quarterbacks, and they just knock him for the slightest things, or they don't watch the way he plays the game, so they see the counting stats. And even with the counting stats, you just mentioned he was accountable for every touchdown except one. He had an insane percentage of the offense was attributed to him. And it's like you said, it's ridiculous. It's almost nothing, and we should not pay any mind to it. But it's out there, and people are talking about it, and we have to do the work to combat it, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I think we got to take a quick break. Yeah. Shout out our sponsors. But we'll be back. Grant Goldberg, Spike Friedman. It's training camp time on the Locked On Seahawks podcast. Can you not afford the gym? Is the gym too expensive for you? Is it too far away? Do you hate getting in the car and going to the gym? I do. I don't go to the gym. I go for a run on the streets. But what happens when it's hot out? It's July. I live in Los Angeles. It's 120 degrees. It's too hot to run. What should I be doing? I should be working out on a Nordic Track. That's right, Nordic Track, the company that basically invented personal home cardio equipment, is still doing it, still at the top of their game. You can get a treadmill from them. You can get an exercise bike from them. You can get an incline trainer from them. You can get a strength trainer from them. You can join high-energy streamed workouts any time of the day without stepping out the door into the heat, turning on your car. It's too hot. Save the environment, please. You know, so you can, oh, man, guys, Nordic Track. It's the best equipment, and we're giving you a deal. Yep. You can use, yeah, $75 off your Nordic Track with the coupon code LOCKEDON at NordicTrack.com/LOCKEDON. If you're a real Seahawks fan, you got to stay in shape for this season. You got to lose weight now.
Always so when you
Yeah, when you're watching the games later, you're eating buffalo chicken dip, putting on that weight. You've taken it off with your Nordic Track now. That's NordicTrack.com/LOCKEDON. Coupon code LOCKEDON. Stay indoors. Get out of the sun. Nordic Track.
We are back with next portion of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You are with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman, and the Seahawks are without Earl Thomas during training camp. He is holding out, and you know it sucks because you know you want to have your game changing safety out there on the field practicing with your team, and Pete Carroll was not happy about Earl Thomas missing out on training camp. Spike, you listened to his presser. I read up on it, but you listened to his presser. You know, we are noted Carrollologists, and he had a particularly spicy quote about Earl. Do you know which one that was?
No, I don't know which one.
Well,
you're
he said, well, you want to have your guys out here, and you coach the guys that are out here.
Yeah.
He's under contract. He's expected to be here.
Yeah, there's a couple things here. One is that Earl Thomas is in the last year of his contract, and this team has a history of extending guys in the last year of his contract. So this is not like the Cam Chancellor holdout where he was trying to break a pattern, or the Marshawn Lynch holdout, or whatever nonsense Marshawn Lynch was up to before his final extension with the team. This ain't like that. Earl Thomas, while not technically within his rights to hold out right now, is following the protocol the team has set over the course of the Schneider and Carroll era. So I think it's a little disingenuous of Pete to say he's under contract, he needs to be here. They've been paying guys in this offseason throughout their entire tenure with the team. If they're not paying Earl, that's not on Earl. So I just think it was like a little disingenuous of Pete to say that. There are two other big points I want to make on this, though. One is that Pete Carroll's been talking up Tedrick Thompson a lot, and I didn't see that coming. I didn't see Tedrick Thompson as the next guy up at the safety position, but that's what it really sounds like is going to happen. So we're going to see. We're going to see what type of player Tedrick Thompson is. I think his performance in the preseason is one of the most important things to look at. Pete mentioned a couple other battles. You know, there's the right guard situation, right tackle. There's the other cornerback across from Keel Griffin. But for me, I think that safety spot, so long as Earl Thomas is not around, is really interesting. And it sounds like Tedrick Thompson is going to get first bite at it. The other thing I want to bring up is Pete, at the end of his presser, talked a lot about how Cam, after his holdout, had a meeting with Pete, had a meeting with the team, and was able to quickly rebuild the relationship and trust with both Carroll and the rest of his teammates. And that he basically mentioned that late in this press conference, essentially giving Earl a blueprint for coming back, which to me means that this isn't over. You know what I mean? Like, it right. gave me a little hope as a Seahawks fan that he's saying that out loud and being like, look at what Cam did. And Cam got paid in the end, not that year, obviously, in the next year. And even though that contract has not worked out well for the Seahawks, worked out well for Cam. You know, he's going to end up making another $13 million over the next couple of years to not play football, which pretty great for him. So, you know, so there is some hope in this, even as Pete Carroll is being a little disingenuous and sort of throwing Earl under the bus early in this presser.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, I think that it's good that he's, like, it's almost like an olive branch he's holding out like to Earl, and, like, he's willing to repair the relationship, which is always a good start. But the fact that this has gotten to the point where we have to talk about whether they're willing to repair their relationship is not a good thing. I think that, you know, Earl is such an important part to the defense, and, you know, we could really be hurting, especially if Ted Thompson or Maurice Alexander, who I completely forgot they signed, aren't up to par at the safety position. So it, we have a lot of things to worry about with the secondary. Mike Tyson played a lot yesterday, and Trey Flowers is in competition. I think he's playing mostly cornerback, though. But there's a lot of question marks that we have to worry about. And I think that, you know, I saw that Earl's contract, they hadn't even discussed it. It was floating around on the timeline. I don't know, you know, the legitimacy of that. But it's just not a good situation. I think that Earl, we've said it tons of times, and we're running in circles at this point, but, you know, he deserves a contract. They should give it to him, and, you know, that should be that. And Earl's such a good dude, too. Tedrick Thompson was talking about yesterday how Earl, from afar, has been helping him throughout this whole process. Like, Earl cares so much about this team. And he wants the team to be successful even when he's not in the field, and he's helping his guys, and he's, you know, making sure they're not lost. It's a lot like the name is escaping me. The safety that was filling in for Cam during his holdout, and he ended up being cut. Deion Bailey. It reminds me a lot of the Deion Bailey situation, where he was getting so much praise and so much help from the guys that weren't there. And, you know, it didn't turn out so great. And so we're leaving this all up to chance. And, you know, hopefully Tedrick comes through if Earl is, his contract is not resolved. And I can't say that with the utmost confidence that it will be by the time the season starts. But at least he's getting praise. Tedrick is getting praise. And he's getting the help. And so he's not helpless out there. He's had a year to learn. And, you know, hopefully, you know, the depth is there that if he can't perform, then Maurice Alexander can step in. But this is all a very long-winded answer to say that I hope Earl comes back.
Yeah, this is dumb. Pay Earl Thomas. He's a Hall of Fame caliber player. You can't just replace him this easily. Like, that's the other thing. It's like, he can't. And Pete Carroll's a great defensive backs coach. Lord knows. No one I'd rather have trying to solve this problem, but I'd also rather he didn't create this problem. And as good as Bradley McDougald was last year, he's not Cam Chance. You know what I mean? Like, if we're rolling with Thompson and McDougald, that's going to feel very different than any safety pairing the Seahawks have had in a long time.
We're going to be watching very different games, and it's going to be a lot more vertical than horizontal to keep everything in front of them like it has been in the years past. And we brought up, you know, other areas of the secondary, and this is something that I'm excited about, because the Seahawks have always thrived on competition, and that right cornerback spot is going to be a very competitive thing. I'd say Byron Maxwell is a favorite, but you also have, and this made me so happy, because it's always a Nico Thorpe hype podcast.
He's
in there competing. He's getting praise from Pete. He's saying that he's a smart player. He's a physical player, and he's learned the system, and he's been one of their guys long enough to where, you know, he's getting in there, and he can step in there and compete. And I'm super excited about that. I'm super excited about Trey Flowers competing, switching from safety to cornerback. And you know, I've been high on his tools as a player, and we're gonna have to see him out there on the field to see where he's at in his progress and in converting from safety to cornerback. But you know, I'm excited to have that depth there, and it's gonna be very important going forward.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great. Yeah, the other cornerback spot is that you've got a lot of interesting options there, but there's no surefire option. Maxwell feels the safest, but as we saw when he's been anywhere other than Seattle, his performance is anything but safe. And then you look at younger guys and you're like, that's exciting. And Nico Thorpe's athleticism is very exciting. But again, those are question marks. Yeah. Can they make that move? Pete said something interesting, which is great cornerbacks always make for great special teams players. But he didn't say the inverse of that. You know what I mean?
Right.
If you've got the skills to be a great cornerback, you've got the skills to be a great special teams player. But just having the skills to be a great special teams player does not necessarily make you a great cornerback.
Yeah, and I'd say that Pete Carroll, you know, having him there and teaching and learning from him is going to be huge for Nico. And the thing that he said, and I mentioned it earlier, that he's been one of their guys for long enough, that he's just been studying and working. And, you know, hopefully, you know, he makes that transition pretty smoothly. I think that, you know, he's got one of the two in the special teamers, and he's, you know, been on the team long enough, he's been learning long enough to hopefully he can be, you know, a positive contributor in the defense. Now, that remains to be seen, and a lot of these places, you know, they're question marks, like you said, but, you know, they have the potential to be really fun if it all pans out. If not, has the potential to be really bad, and
yeah,
defense and offenses are going to score a lot of points against the Seahawks. But you know, at least you know they have young guys, and they can learn and they can grow, whether it be during training camp, preseason, during the season. We're going to see progression of those players, and I think that's going to be a lot of fun to watch this season.
Yep.
All right. Yeah, I think we should take a break right now, and then come back with the rest of the show. So just stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Folks, how's your sex? Is it good? I hope it's good, but if it's not good, if, you know, you're a guy and your sex ain't great and you're like, oh man, what am I going to do about that? Again, this is not something Grant or I have ever dealt with, but hypothetically, if it's happening to you, you go to bluechew.com. That's blue like the color blue, chew, like chewing stuff. There's no other chew. Come on, man. It's a chewable, FDA-approved pharmaceutical, I guess. I don't know what you call it when it's like gum, but it's like it's drug gum, and it's got the active ingredients of both Viagra and Cialis, so you know it's gonna work, and it's gonna work as well as both of those things together. So you're gonna have crazy, like, too good sex. It's gonna be bad. It's gonna be so good it's bad, but that's gonna be good. You can do it anytime, day or night. Doesn't matter if you have had a full stomach, and they're chewable, so they work twice as fast as a pill. So that's good. You know, just bam, just pop that gum in. Plus, it's cool. Everybody loves chewing gum. Pete Carroll's always walking around chewing gum. You can look like Pete Carroll. And also,
just having sex, though.
Yeah, exactly. Pete Carroll, but having sex. Unlike Pete Carroll, who we all know is abstinent. These are made in the USA, and you can get them online, and they will come to your house discreetly. Go to bluechew.com. That's BLUECHEW, blue as in blue, chew as in chew, .com. Promo code CODE, and you get to try it for free. Have better sex. Be like Pete Carroll. Always compete in the bedroom, Blue Chew.
We are back with the final portion of today's episode of the Locked on Seahawks podcast. You are with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman, and we're going to talk a little bit about the line of scrimmage, especially on the offensive end. We're going to talk about the offensive line and the tight end group, but I think first we'll kick it off with the O-line. I'm excited about the offensive line, Spike. I don't know if this is a good idea or a bad idea, but I'm excited. Dwayne Brown gets his first training camp in a couple years. He's excited. He's going to build chemistry with the players even more. Ethan Posick is moving from right guard to left guard, although he can move between the positions however many times he wants or he needs to during the season. We got Justin Britt smack dab in the middle. DJ Fluker has been, he underwent a huge transformation with his body, so I'm excited to get a new face in there, an athletic guy in there. And then we got Jermaine Ifedi at right tackle and George Fant competing at right tackle too. So there's a lot of continuity at the offensive line, and that's why I'm excited. We made the same argument last year that there was going to be more continuity than past years, but it's another year of the same group and a new offensive line coach. Tell me why I shouldn't be excited, right?
Whoa, honestly, this is crazy. Yeah. Do I believe this? Okay, no. Okay, so I would say the strongest unit on the Seahawks, let's take aside quarterback and punter because we know we're great at those spots. But like in terms of group units, I think the strongest unit on the Seahawks right now is the linebacking core with Wagner, with Wright, with Keem and Barkevius Mingo. I think that's a really great unit. I think the offensive line might be the second strongest unit overall. I mean, and that does speak a little bit to how far. I guess the cornerbacks are still good with Justin Coleman and Shaquil, and then whoever wins that other cornerback spot. But like, man, like Dwayne Brown, Britton, Posick is pretty formidable. You get a Fetty and Fant battling at that other tackle spot with an offensive line coach who isn't Tom Cable. And you've got a guy like Fluker there, and then guys with upside like Roos and Odhiambo potentially in the mix for that position that isn't left tackle, where he was so far out of his depth as to be absurd. Because he's not a tackle, he's a guard. So, you know, there's like a lot of hope here. And so the only reason to be negative is we just haven't seen this unit be above average since, Russell Wilson's rookie year when they had a lot of other guys. So I don't know. I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued and I'm hopeful and I like this unit. I actually like this unit a lot more than the other unit that's going to be – well, either the other units that will be pass blocking, which are tight ends and running backs, but – specifically the tight end unit is a little scary to me right now.
Well, I think that I think we saw the high point. Let me travel back to the offensive. We saw a high point last year in a little stretch of games where we saw, you know, if they gel and if they play and perform, you know, just above average, you know, how prolific the Seahawks offense could be. Russell Wilson's clean. He doesn't have guys chasing him down right off the snap. And so there's a little bit of there's a little bit of reason to be excited. But going to the tight ends, we have a sixth offensive lineman that they just drafted who plays tight end, and it's Will Dissly. And you're not excited about him, huh?
Well, I mean, Ed Dixon's hurt. So having a guy like Dissly ready to go as a sort of blocking tight end is good. But in terms of upside, in terms of pass catching upside, Swoops is so much more exciting than Dissly. His athleticism is off the charts. He's got the mindset to be able to play quarterback. He was quarterback at Texas. He's built up his body over the offseason. Pete was talking about him as someone very capable of blocking. I just like him, but I think the fact that our tight ends right now are Dixon, Dissly, Vannett, and maybe Swoops just speaks to all of our fears about Brian Schottenheimer running really vanilla offensive sets that involve the tight end sticking around to pass protect, that involve not particularly intricate route combinations, that really just rely on just vanilla basics that aren't going to win you game. Like, we don't have a game-breaking tight end right now. Will Dissly is never going to be a game-breaking tight end. Nick Vannett doesn't look like a game-breaking tight end. Ed Dixon has played a long time and has not been a game-breaking tight end. These are all average dudes. And, like, that's fine. Average at tight end, it's fine. It's not a nightmare. But we've just had Jimmy Graham, and he was our best red zone target. Our wide receiving core is not a bunch of great players. You know, you're talking – I mean, Doug Baldwin is great, absolutely, in the slot. But you look at Lockett, who had lost a step last year and was not as effective as he was as a rookie when he still, you know, had not – maybe maximize his potential. And you look at Jerron Brown or Brandon Marshall on the other side, Amara Darbo. You're not talking about a bunch of guys who were amazing. I don't know, man. I'm a little worried about what we're trying to do on offense already. And a lot of that is granted because of my biases based on Brian Schottenheimer's track record. But he's got that track record, and we've got this group of guys. And it's a little scary for me.
Yeah, I think we don't have the game-breaking tight end, but, you know, you see the tight end that they drafted, and you see the commitment to the run game, and I think for what they lack in a game-breaking tight end, like like Jimmy Graham had the potential to be, and like he was at times for the Seahawks, they're trying to get back those game-breaking runs. And, you know, whether that's, you know, a smart idea and the way everything's transitioning in the NFL today, it remains to be seen. But we need, I don't know, it needs time. We need to see how the running game shakes out for this Will Dissly pick to be worth it. Because, you know, right away, that's this NFL skill that he offers and blocking at a high level. And, you know, we're gonna just need time and we're going to need to see how it plays out because, you know, first day of training camp, I think we're not going to see a whole lot. So I think, you know, preseason rolls around and even, you know, the early weeks of the season, seeing how this offense shakes out is going to be a roller coaster ride. And we're going to see, you know, if the running game can be even a little effective because that's just, that's, you know, where they put all their emphasis in the offseason.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for it to be worth it, we're going to need to see at least a little bit of a payout. And the Seahawks are going to be, they're going to need to be leading in this game, and they're going to need to be putting points on the board for the running game to be effective. And, you know, the only argument I have for the tight ends is, you know, they have the tight ends to make the running game effective now.
And, absolutely. You're absolutely right on that. I mean, and I guess it's just been so long since we've had an effective running game. It's like, part of me is like, is that even possible? Right. Yeah, it is possible. And if that, you're right. If the running game lives up to the expectations that Pete has for it, this offense will be functional. It could even be good. I think our upside is limited to good right now with the skill position pass catchers we've got. And I guess that's my disappointment. It's because we've got a quarterback who's good enough to run a great offense. The fact that we're not going to let him even really have the opportunity to do that is a little disappointing, but I think you're right that a very good offense that eats clock, runs the ball, you know, Jerome Brown has to bounce back year, Ed Dixon's fine as a pass catcher, Doug Baldwin doesn't take a step back, Tyler Lockett's a little quicker. Yeah, that's good. That's a top 10 offense, and Russell Wilson is balling out, not getting hit. I'm into that, but that is a best case scenario. The worst case scenario is the offensive line doesn't gel. We're not getting guys open with our scheming, and things get disappointing real quick.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see.
Hey, see.
How great is it that, like, we're talking football, Grant, and not
so
talking,
excited.
Like, off-the-field tragedies? Ah, it's so nice.
The only off-the-field tragedy that we talked about today was the fact that people are judging Russell Wilson's offseason for how many award shows he's been to. One thing before we close up the show, I think that, you know, for the lack of pass catchers that they added this year, the commitment to involving the running backs in the passing game is going to be really fun and exciting to watch and kind of, you know, fills in a gap in that area. Tyler Lockett, I think, said that this is the healthiest he's been since his rookie year. I think he was dealing with some injuries last year. So, you know, people are going to be healthy. People are going to be involved in, you know, aspects of the game they haven't really been involved in their Seahawks tenures. And so there's some reason to be excited. If you want a reason to not be excited, Brian Schottenheimer is going to be the one calling the plays. So there's give and take. But, you know, we're talking about football, and, you know, that's a reason to be excited, and it's a reason to listen to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. So make sure you keep tuning in. We are always grateful for you guys listening all the way through. So, you know, keep doing that. I think we're going to start to do a couple shows each week from here on out and then ramp it up when the season starts. A Pete Carroll analogy, we're going to ramp them up in the next 5-6 days. But yeah, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in for the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm Grant Goldberg signing off.
I'm Spike Friedman telling you to use some Blue Chew on your Nordic track. Also signing off.